Hi everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Alami podcast, Change Your Company. My guest today is David Carter, who is the founder of IntelliKey, an organization which is focused on developing not just the skills, but the character of the people to create a great culture, to create a great high-performing organization. Hi, David.
Hello.
David, I'm very excited about this conversation, and I love the work that you do, which is very solid, very deep, and it helps improving the skills of the people, but actually it goes beyond that to changing maybe their lives because of the depths of the work, because we are looking not just at the skills, but at the character, at the values, at and taking this to a level where it impacts the results very well, but also it makes them, in a way, take these changes with them to other places. So tell us a little bit about your work and the impact of that.
Well, thank you for inviting me on the show. Let's start off with the etymology of the word IntelliKey. The word was coined by Aristotle 2,500 years ago. And so the IntelliKey of an acorn is an oak tree. The IntelliKey of a caterpillar is a butterfly. And the IntelliKey of Dr. Fuad is the ultimate version of Fuad with all of his potential fully actualized. So it's a beautiful word and it's a beautiful concept. And, you know, people talk about becoming a better version of themselves or the best version of themselves, but ultimately the very best version of anybody is their IntelliKey. But Aristotle also added on another phrase, which I love, which is that character determines destiny. And what he meant by that was we all end up wherever we end up in life as a direct function of our character. And over the last 20, 30 years in business, employers have been complaining to educators that the young people who leave college or school or university don't turn up to work with the work-ready skills that they need. And that's because the emphasis in the last 20 or 30 years has been on STEM subjects, science, technology, engineering, and maths. And so they turn up without the human skills, the work-ready skills that they're going to need in the workplace. And 50% of young people acknowledge when they get to the workplace they don't have those work-ready skills. And 75% of employers agree with them. And so what are those skills that employers are looking for that their applicants or young workforce don't have? And completely incorrectly, for the last 20 years, that's been called the soft skills crisis. But skills, any skills, a hard skill or a soft skill, is underpinned by a missing domain from that education program, which is character. And so over a three-year period, we interviewed literally hundreds and hundreds of HR directors, L&D directors, and we said, what are these human skills, soft skills that you're looking for that your young people don't have? And we ended up creating a framework with 77 essential soft skills, human skills, work-ready skills that employers said their applicants and workforce lacked. But what they had never taken on board, and I'll give you a couple of examples, is that each of those soft skills, in order to be good at it, you need to be good at the underpinning character qualities. But they never taught the people the underpinning character qualities. So let me give you an example. 3 years ago, and I won't name the firm, but one of the top three management consultancy firms in the world realized that per $1 million of revenues billed, they were making a lot less profit than their competitors. And so they weren't as productive, if you like, as their competitors. And they came to the conclusion that because they bill in 6-minute increments of time, 10 units of time in an hour, that in order to improve their productivity, they needed to improve their time management skills. So time management is one of those 77 essential soft skills. And so every single person in the firm over a 3-year period was sent on a $2,880 per person time management course. And this always makes me laugh, but at the end of the 3 years, they brought in another management consultancy firm to do an efficacy audit of the program that they send everyone on. And the board and the senior leadership team and the consultancy firm that they brought in all came to the conclusion that their time management skills hadn't improved at all. And they didn't understand why that could have happened, particularly when 95% of the people who'd been on the course scored 95% in the quiz at the end of the course. They're like, done that up. So I said, well, show me the course and show me the quiz. And they showed me the quiz, first of all. And I said, well, this is really easy to explain to you because what you were assessing is what was taught, not what they've learned and taken back to the office and applied. You know, you and I could go on a course tomorrow for a day in, you know, making meringues or meteorology or quantum physics. And at the end of the day, if we were given a quiz on 10 things we'd learned during the day, we could probably remember 80 or 90% of them. But in a month's time, we'd probably forgotten all of them. And so they were testing what was taught, not what was learned and applied, mistake number one. But the second thing is, they were teaching the theory of time management and the benefits of time management, not how to practically apply it. So I said to them, okay, well, the 6 character qualities that underpin great time management are learning to be accountable, responsible, disciplined, organized, efficient, and reliable. And if you'd actually taught people how to be those 6 character qualities, guess what? They wouldn't need to go on a time management course because they'd be good at time management. And they'd be good at lots of other of those work-ready skills because they were those 6 character qualities. So you've effectively taught the wrong thing, tested what you've taught, but not taught the practical underpinning domain of character qualities that enable that collective skill of time management to be developed. And one of the ones I just mentioned was disciplined. And so about 6 months ago, we took on a new senior salesperson, and everybody in our firm, every week we have a check-in and we all have to talk about the character quality that we're working on for the month. And there's a professional one and a personal one. Anyway, he decided he wanted to be more disciplined, which was one of the time management ones. And we work in little groups and we all gave him lots of tips and ideas about how he could be more disciplined. And the idea that he came up with, or one of us came up with that he liked, was, you know, we're all distracted by our mobile phones all day long, pinging with WhatsApp messages or Slack messages or whatever. And the tip was, you've got to spend 90 minutes dedicated to hitting the phone, sending emails in your sales role. Leave the phone in the kitchen so you won't be distracted. And then in your diary, put from 9 o'clock to 10:30 sales calls, and then put from 10:30 to 10:45 coffee break, and then put 10:45 to 11:15 more sales calls. And when you go to the kitchen and make yourself a cup of tea or coffee, then you can check your Slack messages or your WhatsApp messages. And at the end of the first week, he said, genuinely, David, I have found 4 hours of greater productivity just by that one simple act of discipline. And so, you know, we were very pleased with that, and so was he. But I love this story. So the other skill that he, or character quality he chose to work on, his personal one, was being kind. And a bunch of the team who were chatting to him about how, said, well, who do you want to be more kind to? He said, oh, particularly my wife. We've just become grandparents and we've been married for 30 years and I really want to acknowledge her and appreciate her. Well, what are things that you know that she'd love you to do that you don't do? Oh, silly things like take the garbage out on Tuesdays when the rubbish guys come, take the dog at 9 o'clock for a walk around the block for a toilet before bed, get the washing in off the line and put it in the laundry basket in the utility room. On Tuesdays when I go to the gym, collect her dry cleaning. And it was just those four things. Anyway, they have a very sort of religious family supper on Friday evenings. And he always says, you know, at 6:30 we have a gin and tonic, 7 o'clock we sit down for dinner and we have a nice family dinner. Anyway, at 6:30, his wife came and gave him the gin and tonic. And she said, look, we need to have a very serious conversation. And he said, oh, really? What's going on? She said, just tell me, yes or no, are you having an affair? And he said, no, of course I'm not having an affair. Why on earth would you ask? And she said, well, ever since you've joined this new company, it's like you're on drugs. You've collected my dry cleaning. I didn't ask you. You take the dog for a walk. You collect the laundry in from the washing line. You do this, do that, and the other. And he said, oh, well, no, I'm working on being more kind. And she said, well, whatever the drugs they've given you at that new company, keep taking them because I like it.
Yeah.
But he then realized that just saying please and thank you to his colleagues at work, you know, just he realized the impact of three or four simple little acts. So he then started to apply being kind at work and at home. And he just said after 2 weeks, you know, being kind is so nice because everybody thanks you, everybody's grateful, you create better relationships with people. So any one of these character qualities, from being disciplined to being organized, efficient, reliable, responsible, whatever, they benefit you in every aspect of your life, at work, at home, in your social life, in your family life. And so you can see, going right back to the introduction, how developing your character determines your destiny. You have a better job. You have a better relationship with your team. You have a better marriage, better relationship with your children. All the things that are important in life to give you quality, you enhance that quality by developing those individual character qualities.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of lessons from the two examples that you shared. The first one is about the training and development industry overall is challenged in many ways because, I mean, I like to use sometimes a metaphor of swimming, right? So if you want to go and learn swimming, if we do it in the traditional corporate learning approach, we would put people in a room and we give them books about swimming. And we give them, show them videos about swimming, and we talk about it for a few days. And we talk about like the, you know, floating theory. We talk about, and maybe at best we make them like move their hands a little bit. And then we tell them, okay, you know, that's it. And maybe at best, maybe we make them, you know, practice, you know, going to the water one time and like the role play, right? And then it's like, okay, so you are done. It's like, really? And the challenge is exactly what you pointed at is, well, I don't want them to just learn how to swim. I want them to swim. So there is a big difference between the two, right? So time management, I don't want them to learn how to manage their time. I want them to improve their productivity. And I want you as a partner, specialize in learning or in HR, to transform that. So you should be accountable for the results in a way. So what needs to happen then, that the people need to kind of go and apply this one time, two times, three times, apply it for a week, and then reflect and share how it's going and what could be refined. And I think this is the challenge that we have. And this is a great example. And the second example that you gave is the power of focus, like when it comes to all this kind of intervention, because when you have like 12, 15, 20 techniques or strategies to improve, I mean, we know how many we will adopt. Like, so, and this is another challenge, right? So when you gave this person like this strategy about tracking their time, which is it's great, and I think every one of us should, you know, from time to time, if not always, track our time and see, because it's the most precious resource. It shows like one strategy how it has a big impact, but the strategy, he was applying it all the time in a way,
and being conscious of it,
of course.
Yeah. And I remember when I was 11 years old, I've got two younger sisters, and I don't actually remember why my mother told me this, but she told me I needed to learn to be more gentlemanly. And I said, oh, how do I do that? And she said, oh, well, go and ask your father. He's very gentlemanly. And so I asked my father, and he said, well, you sort of fake it till you make it. You look for any opportunity to be gentlemanly. So if you see a lady at the train station with a pushchair and she needs help getting onto the train or onto the bus or up the stairs, then go and do it for her. And if you see someone that you can open the door for or help them with their shopping to their car or whatever, you know, just go and do it. And of course, age 11, I was like, right, I'm going to do this as often as possible and then look for as many opportunities as possible. And after a few weeks, you realize all of the ladies who said, oh, what a nice young man, what a lovely young gentleman you are. And I thought, oh, I'm being recognized as a gentleman already. And of course, it ends up being who you are, and you don't consciously think about it. But to start off with, you're looking out for opportunities to try it out. In our learning journey, it's after you've chosen the character quality you want to work on, it's like, we'll go off and explore, you know, find ways to do this, act on it, try them out, and then reflect, and then rinse, repeat. And of course, you know, that reflection allows you for some course correction as well. Or, it nearly worked like this, but if I tried it like that, it would have worked even better. And it's a very simple, you know, learning journey. And in a company where a company wants to become a company of character, we're developing the character competence of every single employee and the whole organization as a whole. Now, you imagine in a company of 500-600 people where everybody is consciously thinking all the time about how can we dial up a particular character quality or a few of them in this meeting, in this situation, solving this problem. And it becomes a language in the whole company. Everybody's conscious about it all the time. And that's why when we start to work with a new company of character, the discover process, which takes 2 months, every individual does a 180 and they score themselves against the 54 character qualities. This is a strength, this is a growth opportunity, this is somewhere in the middle. But then we ask them to do a 360 with 10 colleagues and their boss. And so now they can compare how they see themselves with how other people see them. And that's really interesting, because I see myself like this and everybody else sees me like that. That's great if it's a strength. And actually, if I see myself and everybody else sees me like this and it's a growth opportunity, that's also good, because there's agreement about what you need to work on. But the other two boxes are quite interesting. I see myself like this, but nobody else does. Or everybody else sees me like this, but I don't see myself like it. And but you can end up thinking, right, well, the ones that are going to have the fastest, quickest impact, if I develop them and turn them from a growth opportunity into a strength, will be this one, this one, and this one. Well, then you set your intention for the next 2 or 3 months to work on those. You tell your 360 panel that's what you're working on and thank them for their feedback. And then, you know, as you're walking down the corridor to a meeting, and you say to your colleague, all right, I've got to focus on being open-minded in this, you know, meeting, give me a tip, give me a tool, give me an idea, give me some feedback at the end of the meeting. So you're conscious about it the whole of the time, but also so is your 360 respondent panel. So they'll coach you and nurture you and give you tools and tips. But then we also ask everybody, what do you think the characters, qualities, strengths, and growth opportunities are of the entire organization today? And what would you like the strengths to be in a year's time? So the individual gets a report, which is also a PDF, but also an interactive dashboard, where here's how I see myself, here's how other people see me, here's how I stack rank against the whole company's view of itself today, and where we'd like to get to in a year's time. Well, out of that, there's going to be two or three things that you could work on quickly to get a quick win and make a big difference, and all of your colleagues are there to help and support you. And in the company gets a report called a kaleidoscope, and they can look at that data in thousands of different ways. There's 15 million data points, and so they can look at it by gender, by length of service, by team, by division, by geography, by hundreds of different things. And then they can figure out, oh, look at the top performers in the marketing team. They've all got these character qualities. So now let's look at the other people in the marketing team and help them develop those character qualities to get them also up to peak performance level.
Yeah.
And, you know, literally across the whole company, you can do that by individual, by team, by division, by subsidiary, by geography, by function, yeah, by role, whatever you like.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the power of this exercise is that it creates alignment. I think I love this word, and I use it a lot in my work, creating alignment. And when you kind of measure it at the company level and say where we would like to be, where we are today, and then ask people to kind of connect to that and then identify where they want to grow, and it creates like alignment across the organization. And I think, in a way, what I love about your work is that you shape the culture and then you connect the culture with values and character and the skills of the individuals. So what you end up with is very aligned organization. So the action that's been taken on a daily basis is aligned with the culture and who we are and who would like to be. I think in a way, like, this is for me, this is the job of leadership, to kind of to shape that, right? To create that, to identify that. And I think such a tool is very powerful to help them on that mission. Because if you don't have an aligned organization, then good luck.
Okay, so I completely agree with you that alignment is critical to achieving people. I completely agree with you. And the mistake I think that lots of companies make is they think alignment means everybody understands the strategy, everybody understands the vision. Whereas actually alignment really means we're all in the same team collaborating to help achieve common and shared objectives. And of course, different people and different teams and different departments need to add their value in different ways.
Of course.
But I think, I don't know if you or your audience are familiar with, you know, soccer. But, you know, in English football, you know, there are two or three clubs at the top who've got the biggest stadiums, the biggest budgets, and they can buy any player anywhere in the world. And so, if you like, the alignment there is we're always going to have the very best. But my team, which is in the middle of the league, has got a stadium that's a third of the size of theirs, is owned by an individual, not by, you know, the Saudi royal family or whatever, with unlimited funds. And so what my team's culture is, of course we want to win and of course we want to stay in the league, but we want to entertain our fans. We want fast-moving football, and we're actually not a dirty side. You'll never see us do a dirty foul because that's not gentlemanly or, you know, not needed in football. And so all of the fans love the club because the whole mission of the team is let's provide entertainment. Sure, we're going to lose sometimes, but when we win, we're going to score the best goal of the day in the league. Mm-hmm. And so when people go to the club to play, a year later, they all say, I have never been at a club where having fun, entertaining the client, the fans, celebrating each other is so important in the culture of this club. So, you know, no one ever wants to leave that club because there's, unless they get offered a top slot by Bayern Munich or something at, you know, $1 million a week pay. But that culture, and so at the end of the day, you can have 5-6 high street banks in this country, but they all do the same thing, but they all have very different cultures. And one of the banks is Metro Bank. And they have a philosophy that they don't hire anybody who's ever worked in banking. And their view is that we want good customer service skills and we'll teach you banking. And it's much easier to teach you banking than to teach you good customer service skills. So they actually go around my branches in Oxford, and they go around and see the people serving in other shops, the barista in the coffee shop or whatever. And they're like, okay, you have got amazing customer services. We're going to give you a big pay rise and teach you banking. Yeah. Now, obviously, at the more senior levels, they do need people with banking experience who've got the technical skills. All of their recruitment is, of course, you've got to have the technical skills, but you've got to have the people skills too.
Yeah, it reminds me of a hotel, one of my favorite hotels in Barcelona, and I went there, and like every employee is friendly. Everyone wants to help. So I was blown away, and I asked one of the employees, I said, like, hey, tell me what's going on here. Like, how do they hire you, and what kind of training do you have? And it turned out that they don't have that much training, but actually she told me, look, I am actually a trainee. I said, what? She said, I'm a trainee. And they go and pick people who are like very friendly and they have a big smile. So they pick them like this. So they have their character is already very aligned with the vision and the mission that they are on in a way. So this is a great example. I want to ask you, David, because I would love to kind of keep talking about this discovering more. I wanted to ask you, for example, what got you into this? But since we are reaching now toward the end of our conversation, I want to ask what's some tips that you could give or advice to leaders when it comes to creating a high-performing workplace, an inspiring workplace?
If I asked 1,000 leaders what the top two issues were in their company, I will bet you that 90% of them would say it's really hard to find people with the right skills. It's really hard to retain them. And they'd say there's a lack of work-ready skills and engagement is a problem. And I think really don't understand is that the millennial and Generation Z group have a very different mindset and outlook on life. And many of the leaders are in their 40s or older, and they were brought up in a different generation with a different attitude and mindset. And they're projecting onto that young group of people their mindset and then being disappointed when they don't get the reaction and the response that they would have given 20 years before. And so actually, I think what you've got to do is to find out what you've got in terms of the character competence of your workforce and what they would like the company to be like in a year's time or in the future, and actually be brave enough to redesign your vision and mission and strategy around what the people would then give energy towards and be aligned to, versus I'm the boss, here's the strategy, go implement it, make it happen, and let me be disappointed all the time that you're just not doing what I want you to do the way I want you to do it. And in companies where they have got to understand what the people want versus what they want the people to do, and they've looked at the difference between the two, they've actually been quite shocked and surprised. Well, if we did that, we'd be much better at diversity and inclusion. If we did that, we'd be much better at this. If we did that, we'd have much higher retention and well-being. And actually, yes, maybe we should have a greener agenda or more sustainable agenda. And so actually, because the customers of that organization are often the age group of the workforce, they're sort of reflecting back to the leadership team, well, I want to feel proud of what I'm doing. I want to feel that what I'm doing is a value to my colleagues and my customers. And I want to feel it's aligned with my values. And of course, I understand we need to grow the top line and we need to grow the bottom line and improve our share price for the shareholders. But surely we're going to do that by looking after ourselves and each other better and our customers in this way or that way. And so I actually believe that leaders, if they stopped for a minute and listened to what their workforce were really saying, they could pivot their own strategy, their own vision and mission, and would be pleasantly surprised how aligned and engaged the workforce became to make that vision, you know, a possibility. And I'll give you a really silly example, but it's a true example. lots of companies have some CSR initiative, but it's you know, whitewashing. Yeah, they do it for the sake of it. They don't really. Well, we give 1% of our revenues, not profits, revenues, to a charity called the Association of Character Education. And they teach character in primary schools to the teachers and the pupils. And every time they go into a school, a year or 2 years later, they get an Ofsted, the regulatory authority, excellent, outstanding award. And the regulators say that they only ever give that award in a tiny percentage of cases. And in every case, they gave it because of the focus on character. Well, in a bizarre way, you know, it's like we're cannibalizing our own future. Because if every school eventually did that, there'd be no need in the workforce for what we do, you could argue.
Amazing.
But we want to raise the consciousness of the whole world through the development of character. And I think in 20 years' time, if all those people did join the workforce and were character-focused, we could then help enhance those characters in the workplace and help apply them in the workplace to raise everybody's game even further. So I think that you can, if you're a leader, you know, if you're like, I need to get the revenues up, I need to get the profits up, I need to get the share price up, I'll do whatever it takes to do all of that and really screw the people if I've just got to make some hard, tough decisions. It's like, guess what? It probably won't work for any longer than a year. It won't be sustainable and it won't be enduring, and you'll lose the heart and mind of the people, and someone else will come in and have another go at doing it differently. But actually, to stop people leaving, to make them engaged, to make them aligned, understand who they are and how you can optimize their potential to develop their intellecty, to develop your overall intellecty.
Great. I think there are so much deep thoughts in what you shared. And one of the most famous basketball coaches, I think Coach K or Joe Wooden, like who is famous for picking on like the way the every player would wear their shirt, you know, they tie their shoes, and how this was the essential of success. If we build a organization based on character, there is no way we will not reach high performance. We will not be able to achieve the best in a way. So your work, David, and IntelliKey on creating character-based workplaces is very aligned with the mission of this podcast, which is creating high-performing and inspiring workplaces. So thank you so much for being my guest today. And I'm really proud of your work and your mission.
Thank you very much. Well, if any of your listeners would like to reach out and find out more, please go to the IntelliKey Academy LinkedIn and follow us there, because we post lots of research and white papers and lots of things like that. You can go to our website, IntelliKey.academy. But also David C.M. Carter, which is on the screen, that's the best place to find me personally on LinkedIn. There's only one David C.M. Carter on LinkedIn, so you go straight to me. Yeah. But reach out and we can send you some information about how you can develop your own character or become a company of character. So I'd be delighted to hear from people.
Great. Thank you so much, David. And to all the listeners, thank you so much for being with us, for supporting this podcast. And like always, please do your best, not only within your area of responsibility, but beyond it. Stay inspired.